The Postcast, brought to you by Boyle Sports. Best odds guaranteed, available the day before racing on singles, multiples, online and in shop. Time to switch? Boyle Sports. This is betting.
Hello there and welcome along to this racing postcast. It is Monday the 11th of April. I'm Maddie Playle. This week I'm joined by a star All-Ireland panel. Mark Boylan, David Jennings, Paddy Hassett are joining us to review the Aintree Grand National Festival. And would you believe it, one person on our panel this week actually owned Noble Yates for a couple of minutes, he tells me. So we're going to hear more about that in a little bit later on. That's going to be the feature of much of our discussion, of course, the Randox Grand National Handicap Chase on Saturday. And it was won by a 50-1 shot in Noble Yates for Sam Whaley-Cohen on his final Grand National ride for trainer Emmett Mullins. I was joking with the guys before we came on. Although it's British-owned and British-ridden, of course the Irish had to win the race again. They had the first three once again. So many talking points from the Grand National we have to discuss. And it was an absorbing and a unique renewal this year. So we'll start off with it. DJ, I'll go to you first. The youngest winner since 1940, a seven-year-old, a novice. He'd only had 12 lifetime starts. Could you have seen this coming?
No, not really. I wish I could. Two very shrewd judges, Emmett Mullins and Paul Byrne, who previously owned the horse before, or after, I presume, one of our colleagues on the show today. But they're very, very shrewd. And I'd say pretty early in the season, they devised a plan to go to the Grand National with Noble Yates, kind of seeing that it's a different type of race now, that you don't need your kind of battle-hardened handicapper, that it's not the real supreme jumping test that it once was. And unusually campaigned, obviously, for a Grand National horse. You do go back to that Beginner's Chase win in Galway, which was in October, which is not that long ago. And you kind of look through it and you say, well, Gabonaco was second, and he was obviously second in the Arkle after being supplemented. Magic Days was third, who has proven to be a decent enough mare as well. And even if you go further down the field, the likes of Birchdale was seventh. So it was a pretty good Beginner's Chase over a trip that was obviously short of Noble Yates' best. And since then, I'd imagine the National has been in the back of the minds and working out what sort of a mark we need to get in, but not be too high that it spoils his chance. And I suppose the running Weatherby in the toting behind Ahoy Senior ensured that the horse qualified, because it was a bit of a late dash to get qualified for the race. I think you had to have six lifetime starts over fences, and by the 30th of January, Noble Yates had only had four. So he needed to have two really quick starts back to back to qualify for the race. Then he got in. Then he ran reasonably okay in the ultimate. I'd imagine it was pretty much a prep for the Grand National. And then he won the Grand National. So there is the life and times of Noble Yates in a bit of a snapshot.
Thanks for that backstory, DJ. Very informative, because a lot of people wouldn't have been familiar with this horse. Paddy, you were, and as you say, at the top of the show, you owned him. How did that happen?
Yeah, we bought him as a three-year-old in Tats for £6,500. And I was originally going to hold on to him myself, and then an owner in our yard wanted a horse, so he took him. So it's probably better off he did, because he usually works out lucky, whereas I usually don't. So we went from there, and then we had him, broke him, and obviously got him going, and he ran the point for us in Ballindinisk, finished second. He was flying at the finish, actually. Yeah, there's a big hill in Ballindinisk, if you don't know it. It's a real steep finish, and he was just absolutely motoring up the hill. Another stride and he'd have won. And then we went to Cheltenham Sales and sold him, and Paul Byrne and Emmett Mullins obviously like what they saw in Ballindinisk and bought him, and it went from there.
And what were your impressions of him at home?
Oh yeah, he was a big raw kind of a horse, never really flashy at home. Now, you know, if you had a bunch of three-year-olds, you wouldn't say he wouldn't have jumped out at you immediately. But the more we did with him, the more we liked him, to be honest with you. He just we couldn't get to the end of him. He just stayed. And the farther we went with him, kind of the better he'd be getting. So that's actually why we went to Ballindinisk, because we thought the stiff track would suit him. So it's lovely for my father and that to have, you know, to be connected with a Grand National winner. So we had a Gold Cup winner, and it looks like trouble come go through our hands as well before. So that's the double up, the Gold Cup and the Grand National. So we go back to the sales next year now. Maybe prospective buyers maybe might be more inclined to buy from you, you know.
Champion Hurdle next on the radar.
I don't think we buy Champion Hurdle horses somehow, but who knows? You never know.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. Mark, I'll go to you next. I find it quite interesting. Headgear, obviously, the winner had first-time cheek pieces on. Any second now, he ran a blinder. He had the blinkers on once again. So Tiger Roll, he often wore headgear. That came to the fore this year. But from your perspective, are you going to look at picking Grand National horses differently after being able to digest this result?
Not particularly. The Grand National has been teetering towards a classy race like this, you know, for the last few years, ever since, you know, the welfare changes we made in terms of adaptations to the fences. We've seen better horses contested. And this is culmination of it again. Okay, not necessarily a novice, maybe wouldn't have jumped off the page to you. I wouldn't have ever used it as a stick to beat a horse with. But you know, ultimately, I didn't see him coming at 50-1. I don't know if many people did. Hats off if you did. Something kind of take away from it, in the last few years or even the last decade, traditionally speaking, you wanted to be very handy and, you know, maintain a consistent position throughout. It had looked kind of like you'd want to be in the first 20, jump on the first, and, you know, to be prominent, to just keep your position until sort of Valentine's territory and move on from there. But this time around, I thought it was, you know, noteworthy. Noble Yates was well out the back. He might have only had one or two behind him jump on the first. And I've seen just mentioned online there that Simon Rosens has flagged that we were much quicker going to the first this time around than other years. So perhaps riders were cottoning on to that fact of trying to be handier in a classier Grand National and maintain a position. And you look at, you know, any second now has taken his time, dealt a work. He was midfield. Okay, he probably didn't give Jack as much of a feel as he might have hoped for, but his class got him into the race, I thought, to throw down a challenge that inevitably wasn't enough to get him on top. But I thought that was an interesting development from it. I suppose if it was learning something from the National, it's that maybe that trend of needing to be handy was a little bit dispelled here. But Sam Whaley-Cohen, what's left to say about him? He's absolutely awesome around here. And the man that trains him isn't too bad either.
Indeed. Due credit for Emmett Mullins. And I thought the interview Sam Whaley-Cohen gave afterwards, because he still is getting to know the horse, but he clearly has built up a good relationship with him in a short amount of time and knows him very well. You mentioned the prominent horses, the likes of Freewheeling Dylan, Longhouse Poet was never far away. They finished 7th and 6th respectively. Coco Beach one place behind. So there were, you know, they did still finish some of these, the likes of Lost in Translation, who just didn't see out the trip. DJ, who would you be taking out of the race for next year? And do you think the winner has any sort of chance of following up?
Yeah, I suppose Emmett has a decision to make now. Does he kind of try and win back-to-back Grand Nationals like Tiger Roll and go down that sort of path? Or does he try and mould him into maybe a Gold Cup contender? You know, he won this off 147, so he's going to be up, you know, near enough to 160 after this. He's probably, in my opinion, not good enough to win a Gold Cup, but it'll be interesting to see what route he takes. You know, it's going to be hard to get him back in next year's race, probably off a mark below 160. Like, you look at Manila Times, who won the race off 146. He had a terrible season this season, and he was still rated 161. So it's hard to see how Noble Yates is going to get into the race next year off a mark below probably 160. So that's the kind of, that's the challenge that Emmett Mullins is going to be faced with. But the other side of that is he good enough to be a contender in a Gold Cup? He certainly is a strong stayer, and you'd imagine 3 mile two and a bit around Cheltenham would kind of help him. But would he have the natural pace to keep a prominent position in a Gold Cup? I don't know. I certainly myself probably don't think he's good enough to challenge the likes of Aplutar. Then when you look down through him, like any second now, like probably 2 years in a row now, the first half of the race has gone terribly. And yet he's ran two remarkable races. Like, I'd say Mark Walsh was nowhere where he wanted to be for the first kind of 10 fences. And then he managed to creep into it. And like over the last, like, my God, after jumping the last, I would have had, you know, everything I have on any second now winning the race. I thought he looked an absolute moral. And he was outstayed by Noble Yates. Delta Work, again, probably wasn't where Jack wanted to be, and he wasn't loving it in the early part of the race, but as Mark said, his class got him into it. And then Santini, who I thought definitely wouldn't take to it, absolutely loved it. So as regards, you know, next year, I fancy Fiddler on the Roof on Saturday. He ran perfectly fine. it was funny, for a horse that won a Tolworth, it looked to me like he just was out of his comfort zone the whole way and just maybe was going a stride quicker than he wanted to go, which is hard to believe for a horse who's won a grade one over 2 miles as a hurdler. Longhouse Poet probably didn't get home. So as regards next year, maybe because, you know, he's so lightly raced, Longhouse Poet, and give him another year, he might be one that might come into the race next year because he did travel powerfully through it. But maybe he'd be the one I take from it.
Okay, and we do have to touch on the sad matter that we lost two horses after the race, Eclair Surf and Discorama, sadly, the two fatalities out of this year's Grand National. And some people will say that's an inevitable part of our sport in this race. Do you think we need to change anything about the race going forward, DJ?
No, I don't. It's the Grand National. It's very, very sad, but it's just that's the sport that we love. And unfortunately, these things will happen. Does any further changes need to be made? Like, what else are we going to do? Like, it's, I know somebody put up a tweet saying, what are we going to do? Turn the Grand National into a 4 mile 2 flat race. It's a jumping test. It's a supreme test of, you know, stamina and, you know, jumping. And it is hugely unfortunate, but making it a different test even to what it is now and you know, changing things, how far do we go, Maddie?
That's the question, isn't it? Paul, do you mean some people suggesting you know, clamp down on the number of horses running in the race or shorten the run to the first fence? What do you make of things like that?
No, I'd be with DJ. Like, you know, the Grand National is what it is. Like, it's the pinnacle of our sport. It's a race stops, you know, everyone watches it. It's brilliant. Like, I certainly wouldn't be for changing it. I think the only one thing you could say, if you really wanted to go down the route, that kind of a route, is maybe water the ground more and have it a shade softer. If the ground was softer, as you seen, as we discussed earlier in the conversation, they went quicker early on in the race this year than they have been doing, and the horses that were handy maybe didn't finish out the race. So if the ground was soft, proper soft, you know, it would mean that they would go that bit slower earlier on the race, and maybe horses might get into better rhythm and maybe not, wouldn't be taken out of their comfort zone as much. But like, for me, that would be the only thing. I maybe ensure that the ground is soft first.
Okay, let's move on to the rest of the meeting then. Our first ports of call is going to be Gentleman de May, who won the McGill Novices Chase. Do we think he's the best 2 mile novice we've seen, Mark? I mean, he's beaten Edward Stone now.
Bar Fernie Hollow, yes, I would say. And it's, this whole division has been blown apart with his absence at the spring festivals. You know, I'm not going to say Edward Stone performed a whole bundle below his Arkell form for all the third time lucky is, you know, he's not beaten all that far in third. I actually think in terms of natural potential, this fella could equally be as talented as Edward Stone. I'm not willing to turn around next season and expect that Edward Stone is necessarily going to turn it around with him. You know, the way he's been brought along, I think it's probably suited him not going to Gentleman coming here a fresher horse. But he wasn't beating outstanding horses at home, but it was the style that he was doing that was really, really catching your eye. And, you know, look, it's another step up to get to champion chase level. You know, overall, I don't think any of us watched the Arkell this year, and not knocking Edward Stone, he could only do what he did, and he was impressive at Cheltenham. I don't think any of us thought going into it that it was the strongest race we'd ever seen for the Arkell, and I think coming out of it, we probably thought that too. So, you know, for all that, I would have struggled to be extremely confident on taking on Edward Stone 4-7. You know, we did a podcast on the Friday. It was a watch and brief race for me. I think Gentleman to me, the thing that impressed me most was he had the chance, having been up prominent throughout, to be, you know, there for the taking for Edward Stone. But the burst of acceleration he showed going to the last, I didn't quite know he possessed that, so I learned a lot. It's actually funny, I was doing the stables with Willie Mullins at the start of the season, and I said to him, on the back of the run last year at Punchestown Festival, he was rated 135 over hurdles or something like that. I said to him, Willie, I think this is the best handicapped hurdler you have in the yard here. And he says, oh, he might be, he says, but he's going chasing. So, very clever fella here. It didn't work out in that direction at all. But if they ever want to go back that direction, they can. I suspect they won't, because he's obviously really, really good as a chaser. But yeah, he's proved a fair deal better than that over fence of the season.
He certainly has, and hopefully he'll continue to improve up to that champion chase division next year. Although, as Mark says, Fernie Hollow the real absence from that division. Let's move on to two horses who did run at Cheltenham, unlike Gentleman de May, Sire de Burleigh and Flooring Porter, who fought out the finish of the Liverpool hurdle also on Saturday. The 11-8 favourite was upset here in a really stirring finish. There were some great finishes through the week at Aintree. Portimin, how do you assess this race? Sire de Burleigh, a 10-year-old now, and he's getting a grade one. Disappointing a little bit that Flooring Porter couldn't beat him.
Disappointing a little bit, yeah, that Flooring Porter couldn't beat him. But you'd have to say there was no fluke about it. Like, it's 20 lengths back to champ in third. So they've gone a long, long way clear. Flooring Porter, I thought, done everything right in the preliminaries. He was pretty relaxed. He got a soft enough lead in front. You know, there's no excuses. I think just Sire de Burleigh was on a going day. Hard to know. It's just probably just advertised that the 3 mile division is probably a pretty weak division as them 3 mile hurlers, and if you got a good horse come along, he could probably dominate it.
Yeah, who would you be looking at for next year's stayers, DJ? I mean, Buzz, hopefully he'll be on the comeback trail. We've got the Albert Bartlett win at the Nice Guy. We'll talk about Jolino Bello, who won the Sefton a little bit later on.
You're teeing me up here. You obviously know the answer to this, do you? No, I've been telling anybody that will listen to me that Zana here will win the Stayers Hurdle next year. So I put him up after Cheltenham as my anti-post bet for the 2023 Cheltenham Festival. I think Zana here is made for it, to be honest with you. Epitome probably would have beaten Zana here, and I know we'll come to that later in the show. But I think Zana here would have made Epitome fight for it. And when you actually watch the replay, it's interesting to see that Zana here actually took off in front of Epitome at the last, whereas your perception afterwards would have been Epitome was going to win, you know, 10 lengths. I don't think she was. But I think Zana here is the one. Poddy said it's crying out for something to come and take the division by the scruff of the neck. I think Zana here is that horse. As regards these two, you know, it's interesting. The time, I think, was 1.6 seconds slower than the handicap on the card over the same trip. Flooring Porter, I just cannot understand. He was obviously beaten in the race, so this is a bit pointless. But, like, I cannot understand how all the jockeys said, oh, let's give Flooring Porter another freebie here. Like, I can't believe something didn't just say it right. Let's try something different to try and get Flooring Porter beaten. And, you know, Time Hill obviously probably ran his race at Cheltenham and there was a bit of a hangover here with Time Hill. Champ is just Champ. He's just not as good as he was, and he's obviously had plenty of issues. And it's just a really poor division. And Flooring Porter, obviously at Cheltenham and this year and last year, looked by far the most talented in the division. And, you know, come next year at Cheltenham, he's probably going to be bang there again and, you know, will be one of the favourites. And he's going to be hard to beat again. But I do think it's just crying out for something to come true. And I think the fact that Zana here is only 5, and I think he's going to relish a step up and trip, even against Epitome on Thursday. I just got the impression down the back that, you know, Jack was maybe having to, you know, go a half a stride quicker than he would have liked. I think in a stairs hurdle, when Zana here is able to lob along just off the pace, I think he could be a force to be reckoned with.
I can't wait to be winding you up about that all the way until the stairs hurdle in March. It's going to be a fun one to watch, see how it plays out. More on Epitome and Zana here in a little while. Mark, we'll talk about Three Stripe Life, who won the Mersey Novices Hurdle, when we talk about John Bond later on. I just want to throw a bit of a curveball your way, because Sam Brown won the Betway Handicap Chase, the Grade 3 handicap that can often be a good guide to the Grand National. And I thought he looked every ounce a Grand National contender in this race.
I think you're better off directing this one to DJ, because he has been chairman, founder, everything of the Sam Brown fan club for a long time. And
we've got to let someone else get a word in edgeway, so, in all fairness.
Oh, my God. Well, listen, I didn't see this coming. I thought the ground was going much too quick for him. He surprised me. It's a surprise a few people. Yeah, big step up needed again for next season. But the one thing for a national point of view, one thing you would say is that it is quite open, that whole division. Like, you know, Gordon fired a few bullets out this year, obviously, and you know, Willie had 4 in it. Like, the race, if you have a horse that is on the up or has a little bit of upside to it, I think it counts for a lot, provided you're able to be competitive in the 150 sort of territory. This fella's going to have to find another level again, I think. And I haven't found him the most reliable operator in the past, but what he did, you couldn't but be taken by it. And yeah, sorry to bring it up, Mr. Jennings. I'm sure you would have rather bypassed this topic in our conversation today.
Yeah, me and Sam Brown, we were buddies for a long time. I actually last year's Punchdown Festival, I actually made a point of having a conversation with Anthony Honeyball about this. I said, Anthony, you have the best handicapped horse in training in Sam Brown.
And at this stage, he had ran in the Carlisle race in November behind Imperial Aura over 2.5 miles. And he ran a cracker that day because Black Op was in it, and it was a decent enough race. He ran really well. And then he was supposed to, I thought he was going to win the Ladbrokes Trophy and he didn't go there. Then I thought he was going to win the Peter Marsh and he didn't go there. And then he missed actually the race that he won on Saturday. He missed that last year as well, but he was declared every time. And I said, Anthony, what's the story with this horse? Like, you know, he's seriously well handicapped. Why do you keep not running? Does he need really heavy ground? And he goes, you would not believe the problems we have had with this horse. He said, any problem you can think of, we have had with this horse. He said, he's extremely fragile. And he said, until I actually see him jump in the first fence, I won't believe that he's going to be okay, because he's even got to the races before where they've had to withdraw on him because he's had problems even on the day of the race. So he's had huge problems over the years. He obviously managed to put it all together on Saturday. And I knew someday when he would put it together that he would be an exceptionally well handicapped horse. But unfortunately, I did not know that day was going to be Saturday.
28-1. Sorry, DJ. Sam Brown. Maybe we'll be talking about him this time next year after a Grand National. Who knows? Anyway, that's Saturday of the Grand National Festival wrapped up. We're going to go back in time to Friday and Thursday in just a moment, including we're going to discuss a very controversial stewards inquiry.
Members Club is the ultimate resource for racing enthusiasts and punters, brought to you by The Racing Post. Get access to the Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m, plus exclusive content including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. Head to racingpost.com and click subscribe to find out more.
Welcome back to this Monday postcast. We're going to go rather bizarrely back to Thursday now, because I want to talk about the Juicen Anniversary 4-year-old Juvenile Hurdle. Officially, it was won by Knight Salute. Remarkably, there was actually a dead heat prior to a stewards inquiry between Knight Salute and the 10-to-11 favourite Pied Piper for Davy Russell and Gordon Elliott. Milton Harris and Paddy Brennan both seemed pretty satisfied with the result as a dead heat. Paddy Brennan was adamant in the televised stewards inquiry that, if anything, the interference just at the final flight helped the horse in a way, as he likes to come late from off the pace. But nevertheless, the result was turned around. Mark, what did you make of this decision? Was it the right one?
It's a case of consistency in these matters, and we lack it across the board. We lack it kind of by virtue of the system that we have for, you know, managing these scenarios. I've seen them, you know, turned around in this instance. I've seen them not. I've seen cases where I questioned whether, you know, where there hasn't even been an inquiry sometimes over things like this. There are some of these that are going to be given and some of them aren't. And it's not the answer you want to hear. You'd love me to tell you it's something punchy, that it's, you know, absolutely this horse should have been thrown out, absolutely should have kept the race. But I struggle to be definitive about it, given the inconsistency in general of these decisions. I think Davy Russell, we do see it on occasions with him coming to the last obstacle. And, you know, it's race riding. And, you know, horses can lean, horses can drift. It's coming to a stage of the race where you can easily suggest the horses are, you know, tiring, so to speak. You know, if the margin wasn't, as you know, a dead heat in the end, there was no margin in it. If it wasn't that, you know, I think it's difficult to overturn. But when it is a dead heat, you can pick the most minuscule interference out there and make the case for it. So I wasn't surprised to see it turned around. But if it was kept as a dead heat as it was, equally so, it wouldn't have shocked me. Some people got very hot and bothered about it. I know when it's grade one stakes are higher. I found Paddy Brennan's interaction, you know, nearly for the second time we've seen the televised inquiry. Now, there was no basis, I thought, in Third Wind's stewards inquiry in the pretemps. I thought that was pretty mad, even that they had an inquiry over that. But this time around, to also go in like that, you know, ultimately, you have to question again the need for input from riders. And it's like the rider goes in and says, you know, it was no problem. And then the steward said, no, it was a problem. So, you know, that greater discussion is there again. As someone has mentioned to me, I need to double check it, but I think from a legal standpoint in Ireland, it has been mentioned to me before that you might need to, if you're charging somebody with something, you know, in law or whatever it might be, that they need to be given a chance to state their case, so to speak. And maybe that is one of the reasons it's kept in. I need to be double checking that to be definitive. But, you know, I don't see the value in it unless you have something exceptional to say, you know, and 9 times out of 10, it's going to be making a pitch. But for Paddy Brennan to do this twice, it's very sporting, but it kind of raises questions about the overall system as to, you know, the need for input from riders.
Agreed. DJ, do you think Mark's, do you agree with what he's saying?
I think the Stewart's got it right. I backed Pied Piper. I really wanted him to win. And obviously, I can see Mark's point with consistency, but it was a dead heat. Now, Paddy's point was, look, I had every chance to go by, and, you know, I was aiming at him. And, you know, the result is fine, and it's a dead heat, and everybody is happy. But that's neither here nor there, really, to be honest with you. It was a dead heat, and, you know, he did come across Paddy's ground on Night Salute. So I would say, did it cost him an inch, a millimetre? It probably did, like. Do you know what I mean? Like, let's call a spade, it probably did. And the minute I saw the head on, my first reaction was, he's definitely going to be demoted here, because all he needs is a millimetre here. And I think they came to the right conclusion. The fact that Paddy said what he did kind of muddied the waters a little bit, because, you know, he was happy. And when everybody's happy, then why sadden one side when everybody's happy? But they came to the right conclusion, I think. I just go back to, it just baffles me, like, and I've said this already, I just go back to that beginner's chase at Fairy House when Fleur beat Grand Paradis, where it was like way worse interference. Now, I mean, Fleur absolutely clattered into Grand Paradis. I know the winning distance was a half a length at the line, but it was as bad an interference as you could get at a fence or hurdle. And it was the last fence that day. And there wasn't even an inquiry called. Now, I know that was in Ireland and this was in England, but because of that, I automatically thought if there is interference at a hurdle or a fence, it actually isn't taken into as much consideration as what happens on the flat, on the run-in, rather than over the jump. So for that reason, I just thought maybe he might get away with it. But absolutely, I thought the Stewarts made the right call. But I'd be interested to see what Paddy thinks.
Yeah, we do need to move on. We've not got much time. But this is a really key topic of discussion, Paddy. So what do you reckon?
I thought they should have left the result the same. I just thought, like, I don't think David Russell did anything wrong. His horse is meeting it on the wrong stride, so he lets him run across it to pop it. Like, what's he meant to do? Like, hold on to him and let him run into the butt at the last hurdle. Like, it's race riding. Like, it happens every day of the week.
But that's not Paddy Brennan's fault though either.
It's not Paddy Brennan's fault, but Paddy Brennan could do this very same thing. It happens every day of the week. And it happens out the country as well, not just at the last hurdle, where you're coming down to a fence, you're meeting it wrong, you let them kind of take a sidestep one way so that they'll shorten and then pop it. I mean, I think he done absolutely nothing wrong to me. To me, it was a totally wrong decision to throw him out. Anyway, that happens. That happens, horses. Every day of the week, numerous times, and there's never a word about it because it's at the last race, at the last hurl, and because it's in a grade one, they've thrown him out. I thought it was the wrong decision. I thought he should definitely have kept the race. Well, he's shared the race. I thought then, what happened afterwards, then I thought it was pretty farcical that you bring two jockeys in, you ask them their opinion on how the race went and blah, 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 and then you just totally ignore what they both say. So to me, that was just totally pointless. Like, so to me, it was a bit of a farce of a situation to me, to be honest with you.
And that brings it back to Mark's initial point, I guess, on consistency. And there are fine margins in this game. One margin that wasn't too fine was in the Betway Bowl. It was won emphatically once again by Klander Zobo. It's his second win in the race. And this was a key result for Paul Nick, who is marching towards another trainer's championship. Mark, I'll go back to you on Klander Zobo. He's had some knocks throughout his career and he's clearly a bit quirky. But with blinkers on for the first time, he showed his best. What chance has he got of following up again at Punchestown?
He's got a live chance because that's a particularly open race. I know Manel Indo will go there, but we don't have Abdul Tarrant heading to Punchestown. So, and I think in this overall kind of stay in division or fences, any of these horses could probably beat each other on any given day when conditions are right. And on these type of tracks, you know, away from Cheltenham, obviously, Klander Zobo, you know, Kemptons of the world and places like that, he's really, really is top notch. And the blinkers, as you've highlighted there, that has made a big difference to him. Hats off to Paul Nichols. You know, I was disappointed with him at Newbury. Ultimately, his horses weren't quite right at that stage. I know there was flickers of them going back into form, but I was really pleased because I do like this horse. I thought Conflated ran promisingly enough too. You know, he probably needs all to fall right with him. But he's eight as well. He's at the right end of the spectrum probably for this. Protector at hard race in the Gold Cup, didn't see a whole pile of excuses with him. You know, not going to say he isn't going to get back to win another Grade One next season. He probably will, because there's so many opportunities to do so, and he's a really likeable horse. Again, seven, he's the right edge of the age spectrum. But do I see him winning the Gold Cup? No. I think, you know, if Aputar turns up on his A game in a Gold Cup next season, they have him all to beat. I think the novices coming through, a high senior, I'm sure we'll touch on. I think there's a quality band of novices coming through, and I would imagine that they will add a lot of depth to this, because even, you know, for all that I do like Planetzovo, and he is admirable, he's 10. Kenboy is third here. He's 10. You know, if there's a few of them knocking around here that I'd love to see a bit of fresh blood injected into the division. But looking forward, I hope Paul Nicholls takes on the challenge and brings the punches down again, that the trainer's title seems to be in his keeping.
It certainly does. And some of his horses run a little bit off at Aintree, but others brought their A game. He had the second and the third in the Betway Aintree hurdle. We've already touched upon Zanahir's departure. DJ clearly thought he was going to go very close, if not win, and he fancies him for next year's stayers. Pordy, I think this is quite an interesting race if you're a fan of Epitome, because do you want to go and run in the back of Honeysuckle again? Do you go to the mare's route next year? I've even thought, do they try and go over 3 miles with her potentially? What would you do?
I think the mares is the obvious race for her now at this stage. She showed now she gets the 2.5 mile, which would have been a question mark before entry. And then that doesn't look a particularly strong division. There's no real standout mare there. She'd certainly be favoured for a mare's hurdle if she ran in it. Whereas now you have, with Constitution Hill, Honeysuckle, she's probably down to pecking order. You've probably a couple of more novices that'll be in around the market, same price as her. So you're looking at her probably being 4th or 15th in a champion hurdle, as opposed to being favourite for a mare's hurdle. To me, it's a no-brainer. You go to mare's hurdle with her.
Okay, succinctly summed up there from Pordy. On to one of those novices, although he could be going chasing, John Bond. He won the top novices hurdle, beating El Fabiolo in a really cracking finish. DJ, who would you have out to confirm the form next time? And what did you make of what John Bond showed? We really got to see him battle here.
Yeah, I definitely would fancy El Fabiolo to reverse the form if they ever met again. They probably won't over hurdles at this stage. I thought it was a hell of a run from El Fabiolo. For a horse with such little experience, who obviously missed Cheltenham and missed the Dublin Racing Festival, to come here on the back of, you know, a couple of runs in France and then that win in a Mickey Mouse maiden hurdle at Tramore. And again, you go back to that third last and you just wonder if Paul had went to the outside rather than kind of veer back towards the middle. And I know there was a gap and we've seen it in the replay, but you know, you're talking about very small margins here again. He was beaten a neck and he was hampered. It looked like he lost more ground than a neck at the third last. I know he had every chance to win on the run-in, but hell of a performance. They put 19 lengths clear of Vina Ardanza, and there was some pretty decent horses well beaten in the race, the likes of First Street and Surprise Package. I think El Fabiolo is going to make a smashing chaser next season, and it's going to be fascinating to follow his progress.
Yeah, they're already looking towards the Arkle with John Bond, so maybe they will clash over the large obstacles. And Three Stripe Life, who we've not really touched upon yet, he's going to go that way as well. Where do you think he fits in?
He's just a lovely horse. He's going to make a really nice chaser. I could see him, you know, turning out to be a top-class three-mile chaser in years to come. Just everything is effortless to him. Like, I was fairly invested in the second horse in that race. I said at many a preview night going into Cheltenham that I thought that Mighty Eye was the best handicapped horse in England. He was rated 135, and I just thought he had the Martin Pipe written all over him. He missed Cheltenham with a setback. I was just delighted he ran well to finish second, because I do think he's got a massive engine, and I think he's a horse that's still learning on the job, Mighty Eye. He was put in his place after the last by Three Stripe Light, but I do think they're two good novices that will develop into really good chasers. You just have to love the way Three Stripe Life goes about his business. Like, he travels really well, he jumps well, and you know, he's still a relatively likely race as well. That was only his 7th career start. As regards next season, I'd say he's probably a Turner's horse. I'd say that will be the race for him, and I'd say it's probably the race for John Bond as well. I think John Bond is more of a kind of a 2.5 miler than a 2 miler. But Three Stripe Life, yeah, I think he'll make a smashing chaser, Maddie.
Boosts for both Sir Gerhard, whose Three Stripe Life was behind in the Ballymore Novices Hurdle, and Constitution Hill, of course, because Might I was second to him way back at the start of the season. Porter, you said earlier on in the show how you've had plenty to do with the Gold Cup winner in Looks Like Trouble. Could a Hoist and Yore be a future Gold Cup winner based on his win on the Mild May course on Friday? He was exceptional, I thought.
No, I don't think he's a Gold Cup horse myself, to be honest with you. I still think he wouldn't, in a better class of race, I don't think he'd get away with jumping the way he did in the entry. He's beat Fury Road by 5 lengths, which isn't nothing to really write home about. Long Press, I don't think, ran its race. I think he left his race in Cheltenham. Brave Man's Game obviously didn't run his race. So you just have to think, like, he's two grade one winning performances, have both been at entry. Entry form can be suspect at the best of times. So for me, he's a lot to prove to be a Gold Cup horse. And I'd say anyone taking single figures about him now would want to maybe have a chat with themselves.
Wow. Okay, so you don't like him at all. I must admit, I've not always been a fan of this horse's jumping, but I think he's got a huge engine, DJ, don't you think?
Yeah, he does. I can see Paddy's point as well. At the moment, whatever, what is he with Boyle's Paddy? Is he a single figure price? He's eight or ten to one
or that. I think he's across the board most places. If you're taking 8 to 1 about a high senior, well, surely you'd rather back Gallon from the Champ at 5 to 1, no?
Yeah, look, I can see there's far better 8 or 10 to 1 shots than a high senior in the Gold Cup. The only thing I will say is, the Gold Cup is 3 mile 2 and a bit, whereas the Brown Advisory this year was 3 miles and 80 yards. And it's on a different course. So the Brown Advisory is obviously on the old course and the Gold Cup is on the new course. I definitely think the new course will play to a high senior strength more than the old course did. You're always turning on the old course, I find, whereas on the new course, you have a better chance to get into a better rhythm down the back, especially in Cheltenham. So for that reason, I think he's a massive player in the Gold Cup. I'm not saying he's value now, and I wouldn't tell anybody to go out and back him now for the Gold Cup. And he does have jumping issues. But I think if it was a 3 mile, 2.5 flat race, I think he will just gallop them into submission. It is just jumping that's a big issue. I think, come next February, he's going to be one of the leading players in the Gold Cup. I wouldn't be as down on him as Paddy, but I can see where Paddy is coming from as well.
Yes, and I guess when you look at this form, Lomprese arguably not shown his best. I'd say a Hoist and Yore probably has more improvement in him than Lomprese, though, who's always been very professional and very slick at his obstacles. And Brave Man's Game, the 11-8 favourite, very, very disappointing. A couple of minor mistakes from him, but essentially was a bit too gassy and never really going. Mark, where do you stand on this? Are you somewhere in between Porty and DJ?
No, I'd be more positive on a Hoist and Yore than negative. I'm looking forward to seeing. I don't think he's the finished article just yet over fences. Like, even as a hurdler, I know he's won a grade one entry, but that, I think, was his only graded start over hurdles. Like, I do think in general, for all that he has had, a bit of racing this season, he had 6 runs over fences. I still think there's a little bit more to come from him. Absolutely take on board the jumping question mark to a certain degree. But DJ took the words out of him out. That course to Cheltenham for the Gold Cup, I think it's going to be right up his street. And, if Abdul Tahir turns up at his very, very best, like we saw him this season, he won't beat Abdul Tahir. But, we've seen in the past, it's difficult to even get back to Cheltenham, for a Gold Cup after winning it. We've seen a lot of them don't get back there. We've seen ones that do get back there often don't even, reproduce the same level of form. So, as an up-and-coming type, relatively speaking, I'd be more positive about him than negative, for sure.
The only thing I'll say on that is, Paddy was talking about Fury Road there, beating Fury Road by 5 lengths, nothing to write home about. You can use Fury Road whatever way you want to frame your argument here, because if you want to go, the form is not that good, he only beat Fury Road by 5 lengths, and you can say Fury Road was hammered by Gallop in the Champs at Leopard's Head. But you can also say Fury Road, when he's on a going day, absolutely bolted up in a grade one at Leopard's Head at Christmas, and he was beaten, a Whisker by Monkfish in the Albert Bartlett. So I think that was Fury Road absolutely 100% on a going day. So I think that's stronger form than
Would you not question the form of the Cheltenham race?
Of which Cheltenham race?
Of the Brown Advisory. Gallard, O'Neill finishes third, a length and a half behind him. he wouldn't even be mentioned in a conversation for a Gold Cup. You know what I mean?
But I think Ahoy Senior did stuff spectacularly wrong in the Brown advisory. Like, he basically made as bad a mistake as you can and stand up at the third last. So there are reasons to think that Ahoy Senior is better than he showed in the Brown advisory.
Yeah, but then you look at the Brown advisory. Farouk Dalin falls at the second last. He was going to run a massive race. He's going to finish in front of. He would have finished in front of a high senior anyway. So I mean, Farouk Dalin is probably twice the price of a high senior for a Gold Cup. I don't know.
I wouldn't be taking a high senior's Brown advisory run at face value. Like you can surely.
I can't see the run. Like, where's the run that puts him in? Makes him a Gold Cup horse? Like, he's beaten Carlisle. He beat Mr. Incredible in Newbury, who down tools completely, has given up on the game. Brave Man Game beats him in Kempton. He beats Noble Yates in a nothing race in Wetherby. Noble Yates is only having a run around to get a mark for the Grand National. I mean, he doesn't have the form for a Gold Cup. Like, we're all. I just don't see it. Like, I think he's a million.
So you wouldn't like Lompressa either for a Gold Cup then?
Not at all, no. He'd be a million. The two of them would be a million.
Strong words from Fordy there on the novice chasers over 3 miles. We do have to move on. Fakir Duderi, he won the Marsh Chase, another grade one for him. Quite an easy assignment in the end to beat Hitman and So Royal. Mac Tossey won the Randox Topham Handicap Chase for the Bowens. They have such a fabulous record in the race. And also Jolino Bello, he dominated what looked a pretty poor Sefton novices hurdle, if truth be told. But he looks a stayer to watch next season. Who do you want your last word to go to, Mark? And were there any eye catchers for you over the Aintree Festival?
Oh, genie, eye catchers. Well, Fakir Duderi, I know we're only just briefly mentioning him there, but you know, Mark Walsh and Joseph both felt that was a performance that was right up to his very best in his career. It just goes to show you know, no Alaho, no problem. You know, I think he's bumped into Alaho four times, beaten by Alaho, or finished behind him four times. You know, overall, he's just a monster, isn't he? But Fakir Duderi, like, to touch on Joseph for a second, I know we're entering more of an era where he's definitely focusing on flat rather than jumpers, but to have a team of kind of roughly 20-25 flat horses, or jumps horses, I should say, whatever it is, for him to produce Dublin Racing Festival winners, Cheltenham Festival winners, entry winners in a season, I mean, God, if he wanted to stick at this jumping crack, he surely could, you know. He's absolutely deadly, you know, in terms of an eye catcher for the meeting. If I take one horse that was beaten away from the whole festival, it's El Fabiolo. I know DJ's made the case from there, but I absolutely love what I saw. You heard how strong Willie was on him at Tremor. You know, it's not often that he's as forward and as common as he was about him there. I absolutely loved the horse. And John Bond, you can make the case maybe that John Bond's performance might have been below his very, very best given the season he's had and given he's coming off a relatively short turnaround from Cheltenham. But overall, El Fabiolo coming here off surely what wasn't a perfect prep by any means. You know, even experience, he doesn't have that base that John Bond has. And for all John Bond is definitely smart, I still think the level of what we saw, you know, the Dysart Dynamos of the world when he's in his game, I think he probably beat John Bond. I know we didn't see it at Cheltenham. Constitution Hill is on a different level again. But just El Fabiolo is one. I think he'll improve past John Bond next season. I really, really like him.
Okay. From the jumps to the flat, because we do have to move on, although we could talk about this meeting, I feel, for many, many more minutes. The 1,000 guineas and the 2,000 guineas are approaching closer and closer, and we could well see the winner of the latter on Wednesday, because Native Trail is due to take in the Craven Stakes. So we're going to talk more about the flat just after this.
Are you football crazy? Then Racing Post's new podcast could be just for you. Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs brings all of the best football betting insight from Racing Post's top football tipster. As well as that, Mark will be joined each week by a friend from the betting community to guide listeners through their best bets. Simply search Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs on your podcast app of choice and listen today.
Welcome back to the Monday postcast, and it is the flat we're focusing on now. Native Trail could reappear. He's obviously favourite for the Kipco 2000 guineas. We're looking forward to seeing him in Wednesday's Craven Stakes. We're going to take a look at the two classics at Newmarket in the final section of this show today. I'll throw to Pordy first off for the Colts betting. How strong has Native Trail been?
Very strong. Obviously, he's done nothing wrong to date. Been very impressive. He's 11-4 at the moment. Luxembourg 9-2. Corbis 4-1. Point Lonsdale 10-1 and 16-1 bar.
Okay, DJ, where do you stand on Charlie Appleby's two to start off with? Because there was some debate among racing fans last year whether Coroebus was actually better than Native Trail.
Yeah, they're both very good. This is one of these situations where, you know, Aintree has been on and, you know, obviously we're not that far after Cheltenham and you kind of, you know, for this show this morning, I kind of started looking at the flat stuff and I was working in the Curry yesterday. And I just looked at the 2000 guineas market yesterday evening and without having looked at it probably since last, you know, September, October, November time, I genuinely thought Native Trail would be a good deal shorter than 11-4 for the 2000 guineas. And I was pretty shocked to see that he was actually still 11-4 because the guineas is on, I think, it's on actually in April this year. I think it's the 30th of April. So we're 19 days away from the guineas at the moment, and Native Trail is 11-4. I think that's really, really decent value. I thought he was by far the best juvenile last season, and I thought he actually won the Dewhurst when he wasn't at his best. You know, he hit a flat spot coming out of the dip, and he still beat Dubawi Legend quite convincingly there. Yes, it was wasn't the greatest Dewhurst we've ever seen, and you know, a lot of horses probably didn't run up to scratch. I think Straight Answer was Jer's big hope, and that ran a shocker. But to me, his form when he won the National Stakes is the best piece of form from last year's juveniles. He bolted up. Point Lonsdale was beaten fair and square. Ebro River was third. He came out and won, obviously, next time. I can see Native Trail winning the Craven on Wednesday easily. And I think on the day, he's going to be much closer to even money than he's going to be 11-4 in the guineas.
Okay, no love for Coroebus, Luxembourg or Point Lonsdale then for DJ. He thinks it's straightforward. The only thing I'd worry about is he's buying Oasis Dream, who's never really had a 2000 guineas winner, but a very good sign nevertheless. Mark, where would you be looking?
You know, over the winter, I've been thinking about this probably more than DJ. I love this time of year coming back, and I've been kind of swaying between the two, but watching back more and more, I'm kind of talking myself into Coroebus at this stage, coming exactly on the angle as you've come with Maddie in terms of stamina. You know, look, at maybe for the guineas, Native Trail is going to be the better of the two, but for the season ahead, I think I'd take Coroebus. You know, and we've seen some of these Appleby 2-year-olds, and they do go on, don't get me wrong, they win races at three, but maybe they don't, you know, the likes of Pinatubo, etc. Native Trail was exceptional at two, and I'd just like to see him back it up again. I'd be very interested to see how he gets on Wednesday. Look, he's going to win, surely. Like, I mean, he's going to be very, very short. It looks an ideal opportunity for him to get off to a good start. But just Coroebus to me, look at the way he just oozes quality. And I think if there's a horse maybe that has to mature over the winter and, you know, become a bit more of a man, I think it's him. Long-term prospect, I'd take Coroebus over Native Trail. For the guineas, it's tough. Luxembourg, like, he's done very, very little wrong, and I'm a big fan of the horse. I had viewed him more as a Derby prospect than a guineas prospect, you know, heading into, you know, the Virtue Futurity. I was nearly going to call it the wrong name there. But I viewed him more as a Derby prospect. They seem to want to try their luck at the guineas. I think he could run a race similar to kind of Australia in the guineas, but might not necessarily get there. He's in that sort of mould. I think 10 furlongs plus is going to be his bag. But Point Lonsdale, just I can't get that run out of my head last year in the National. How Native Trail put him away so easily. I'm just gone a little bit lukewarm on him. Look, long-winded way of saying that Coroebus is probably the one that I'm looking forward to most of that bunch for the season ahead.
Okay, all very straightforward so far. Paul, you got any dark horses in the division? Do you think any horse is going to be really well backed or take a big leap forward?
No, I think like it all depends on what happens in the trials. Obviously, Native Trail obviously is going to get his run Wednesday, which is perfect. Like, I mean, that probably leaves him 3 weeks then till the guineas. Like, so it's a perfect preparation. If he goes and wins well, like, obviously he's going to shorten. In terms of dark horses, I'm struggling to see any, to be honest with you. I was a big Luxembourg fan. I loved him the day he won in Killarney. Clarney's a tight track, like it wouldn't have suited him at all. First time up as well. Aidan's never win first time up, hardly. And, you know, just I thought he was unreal that day. And I thought, like, he won and his last run was on soft ground. I don't think that would have been ideal for him. So I'm looking forward to him. I wouldn't be backing him for the 1,000 guineas. But I think in terms of the season ahead, I think he'll have a big season.
Yeah, I'm a big Luxembourg fan too. I must admit to be a supporter of his for this race, Anti-Post, but I'm not so sure it will be exactly his bag. I can see Mark's vision coming true. That was the 2,000 guineas anyway, and Luxembourg owners Westerberg partnership, they have a 1,000 guineas contender in Tenebrism, who was last seen winning the Cheveley Park in explosive style, but she's second best in behind Inspiral, who won the Fillies Mile for John Gosden and Cheveley Park. Run us through your market, Paulie.
So it's 9-4 Inspiral, 9-2 Tenebrism, 11-1 Discoveries, 11-1 Tuesday, 10 Homeless Song, 16 Mission Sin, 16 Malvat, and 20-1 Bar.
Brilliant. I was a big fan of Homeless Songs. I thought she could run a nice race in this. I like what I saw from her on reappearance. DJ, where do you stand? Do you think Tenebrism's going to see out this trip?
Yeah, I don't know. The two that I like, certainly at the prices, and I'd nearly be coupling them, is Discoveries and Homeless Songs. And they'd be the two I think are probably a little bit overpriced. We've seen with Weld over the years how he gets these, you know, fillies to progress with age. And he seems to have done similarly with Homeless Songs, who I thought was really impressive in the 1,000 guineas trial at Leperson. That kind of move from the 2 furlong pole to the 1 furlong pole went from looking, oh, would she get into it, to, oh my God, she's going to win easy, to kind of idling a bit towards the finish. And that turn of foot was really easy on the eye. And as regards Discoveries, you just get the impression with Discoveries, you know, she's going to be better, I think, at 3 than she was at 2. And you go back to that Moigler win at Irish Champions weekend, and you know, she always looked like she was going to win. There was never really a moment that she looked like she was in trouble. She's obviously a sister to Alpha Centauri, half sister to Alpine Star. Everything suggests she's going to be better at 3 than she was at 2. So yeah, certainly I think if you're back in Discoveries and Homeless Songs at double figure prices, I think you've got two really strong chances in the guineas.
Okay, DJ, not keen on the top two in the market then. Interesting, Mark. Do you agree with him? Why do you think that is?
I think DJ is reading my notes. I think the value is definitely those two fillies. And Homeless Songs is probably the one that just swings it for me. Hugely impressed with what I saw from her at Leperstown.
Do you have about Inspiral and Tenebrism then?
I think in terms of natural progression, you're going to see some from Inspiral for sure. But Homeless Songs has looked naturally talented at 2 without having really the tools to put it all together. She's by Frankel, and I was surprised to see her do what she did over 7 so well at Leopardstown. I know her dam won a maiden, I think it was over 7 first time up, but I wasn't expecting that burst of speed from her. And you know, strictly in terms of prices, like I don't see the difference in price between, you know, Inspired been 9-4 and this filly been 10-1. I don't think there's roughly 5 times more likely to win it. Tenebrism, I have stamina doubts. Yeah, I'm unsure about her over the trip. She might give herself a chance. She's always been held in seriously high regard, but I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure. I just think Homeless Songs, she's got loads of quality about her. As David mentioned there with Dermot Well, he's actually never won the 1,000 guineas. He won races all over the world. This is one that has eluded him so far. But I think this will be one of his best chances now in a number of years to be able to do it. You know, and that 1,000 guineas trial was a proper race. Like, you had a couple of the highest rated fillies in Ireland as juveniles reappearing from last season. Actually, if you're looking for a filly maybe for the Irish 1,000, that, you know, there's no markets, I'm pretty sure, at this stage, but one that could run well at a big price, that I thought, you know, is one to keep an eye for the season. Villanova Queen, Jessica Harrington, Master Craftsman filly. Really, really liked what she did over a trip that wouldn't have been ideal from her. Drawn wider than ideal. Could have had things pan out a little bit better for her. She's the one to stick in the notebook. But Homeless Songs and Discoveries, as Dave said, don't you go too far wrong at the likely prices.
Okay. Lots of French interest potentially in this race, with Zelly for André Favre, Malbath for Francis-Henri Graffard, and Rosacea for Stéphane Wattle. Paulie, I'll give you the last word. It seems like you're going to get a pile of money coming in for Homeless Songs, because we're all on board, I think.
Yeah, I'd struggle to have a bet in the race, to be honest with you. 3-year-old fillies early season, I think a lot can happen, especially with fillies between 2 and 3. I wouldn't have any interest in having a bet in it, to be honest with you.
Okay, and that's absolutely fine. Responsible gambling. If you don't fancy a horse, then you don't have to get involved. Always remember that. But we are going to get some advice for the week ahead. I'm sure the guys have been looking at Newmarket, but there is still jumps action this week as well. Who are your naps?
This will not be beaten.
Mark, I'll let you go first.
I'm going to Dundalk of all places tomorrow. There's a 6 furlong handicap, and I quite like the look of Jared Maddox, trained by David Marnan. He's been in better form, back to his best form this season. Denied the hat-trick last time after a sluggish break. But down a pound here. Wide draw is no worry because the style he's going to be ridden. I think there's enough pace in the race that'll allow him to make his passage pretty well. And overall, I don't think it's the strongest race for the grade. Thought it was a better race than he ran in last time. So I think he makes plenty of heat. He'd probably be an okay price as well. So give me Jared Maddox at Dundalk on Tuesday at the 8 o'clock.
Fantastic. Best of luck with that one. Paulie?
I like Tillis, a horse of Simon Crisford's in Newmarket on Wednesday. It's the last race, the handicap. Just thought the handicapper left it in light enough off 87. Its maiden form is working out very well. It was second to Harrow in a fast last maiden. Harrow now is, I think, is rated in the hundreds anyway. Tillis gets in here off 87. Even the form when it's won its maiden, the second obviously ran well in maiden, is rated in the hundreds as well. So he could just be let in light off 87.
Okay, potential handicap block there from Porty. And DJ, finally, where are you looking this week?
I'm actually going to go to Cheltenham, Maddie. 2:05 at Cheltenham on Wednesday. It's that grade 2 handicap. I think it's the silver trophy, they call it. I like Simply the Bets for Paul Nicholls and Harry Cobden. Hasn't gone to any of the spring festivals. I actually fancied him to run a big race in the Cotswold Chase. And he just never really looked happy at all. At no stage was I happy. He was only sent off 3-1 for that. If you go back to his run on New Year's Day behind Vienna Court, off only a pound lower, I thought that was a really cracking run that day. It just strikes me as the type of race where Nicholls is kind of targeted with Simply the Best. He missed Cheltenham, obviously missed Aintree. And there's a nice little prize pool. I think there's nearly 40 grand to the winner. And I'd say he probably said to himself, you know, a race like this is going to be important in the Trainers' Championship. Let's have a decent crack at it. Cool Cody is likely to be favourite. Like, Simply the Best is 9-2 with a couple of firms at the moment. Cool Cody is favourite. Like, Cool Cody is up to a mark of 152 now. Gone up £7 for winning the plate at Cheltenham. He can't, like, I know he loves Cheltenham, but he can't be well handicapped off 152. Like, it's a massive ask from him. And then you're into last year's winner, Man of the Mountain. Soul and Silver's in there as well. But I think Simply the Best, definitely the best horse in the race. I still think he's more than capable of winning a handicap like this off mark 154. I think 9-2 is a big price, Simply the Bets.
Thanks very much, DJ. This weekend, you've got Newbury and the Greenham meeting to look forward to. That's sure to be a competitive trial for the classics, and also jumps action from Haydock Park, where they have their series final meeting. I'll be back on Thursday to run through all of the previews you need with our tipping team. But until then, have a wonderful week and best of luck with wherever you're betting. We'll see you next time.